Hello, ladies and gentle sirs. This is Andrew, the producer of the Liars Club podcast. First off, we always want to say thank you for listening. Please tell your friends about it and let them know what a great show you're listening to, because we would really appreciate it. Also, if you could give us a rate, a subscribe, a review, all that fun stuff on whatever app you're listening to, it would mean the world to us. We also have live episodes that we're going to be coming out with pretty shortly, so be on the lookout for that. We recorded the first one live at the Ice House in Pasadena, and it was a ton of fun, so you're in for a treat with that one. And our next episode that we are going to be recording is going to be at the Dojo of Comedy on Sunset, and that's going to be on December 19th. So be on the lookout for that. Tickets will be on sale soon. So thank you very much, and keep on listening.
Welcome to the Liars Club. This is where we take our guests, we tell them to give us the truth, give us a lie, we figure out which is which. I'm Jessica Wellington.
I'm Felicia Michaels.
And you're about to get lied to.
Jessica, we have fantastic guests, patient guests with us today, don't we?
We do. Thank you. And I'm very thankful for that.
Yes, yes. You know, what I was thinking about when I was driving over here, as I introduce these two gentlemen, that you guys have something in common, and you might not even realize it.
Huh?
And, yeah. And what that is when I quit comedy for a long time, and then I came back.
You slept with both of them?
No, your MO. No, what? But you two were the first guys that kind of gave me spots when I got back into comedy. Please give it up for Mr. Court McCown and Brian Monarch, everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're giving, Brian. We're giving human beings.
We both like Puma, too. I have that hat.
Oh, it's the best, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I heard that they're Nazis. We learned that.
No.
Where did you learn that?
Yeah. Puma school? Who told you that?
Kevin Christie.
Oh, fuck.
He said Puma is a bunch of Nazis.
The guy that invented Puma was a Nazi.
No.
Yeah.
No, they're the nicest people in the world.
Yes, to your face.
Right.
No, they're fantastic people.
Those Nike Nazis you got to look out for.
Yeah. Right. So Nike's are, exactly. And, those are, and Adidas, come on. I mean, they're German.
Right,
I mean, come on.
Right.
Talk about Nazis.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway.
I'm just saying.
So how's it going? And also, as we were discussing, as we were patiently waiting for the podcast booth to open, I didn't know that you were from Oklahoma.
Court. Yeah.
Yeah. So is Andrew.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's from Edmond, Oklahoma. It's very white, you know, very Nazi, Nazi area of Oklahoma.
Home of Puma shoes.
Yeah. Home of Puma.
My dad was from Oklahoma, and so whenever I hear a man tell me they're from Oklahoma, I'm like, I fucking know you, dude.
Oh, you
what part
think
were you from? I mean, Native American. That's all I can think. That's
well, I was born in Tulsa, and I grew up in Oklahoma City, and then I lived in Stillwater, Oklahoma.
What
which
a
is
name. That's a sexy name.
Stillwater's a great town. It's where Oklahoma State University is. It's a fun ass town. And I mean, I'm not a young man. I'm an older gentleman, and I use the term gentleman loosely. But I grew up in a time when it was like really fun, man. Like, you know, it was like still small town America. No internet. You know, you rode your bike through town.
Right,
you could drink and drive.
Back in my day,
yeah. Fuck yeah! Back in my day was good,
yes,
man.
Yes, yes.
You could still drink and drive. Like
you were still.
It wasn't even illegal yet. Is what you're saying?
No, I mean it was illegal, but like you could, like you could get away with it.
Just slip the guy a 20, and you're good. Right?
No, but it's unless you hit somebody, they'd be like, bro, what are you doing? Like, you know, come on, man.
You know, there's Oklahomans, bro.
I remember my stepdad once. Like got all fucked up and drove into somebody's yard, like missed the driveway and drove into the yard, and the cops came and they like backed his car out and put it in the driveway for him and let him go in.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's like, you know, then that damn Mothers Against Drunk Driving, those people.
Well, we're about the same age, and that was a tremendous time. But the downside of that is every year when people graduated at my high school, someone passed away from drunk driving.
Yeah.
From partying too hard. Before graduation.
Yeah, so well, there's pros and cons.
You don't
cons
remember
to
those stories.
What a bunch of pussies.
It was so different back then. Like, I tell people all the time about the NRA when I was, because I grew up in Colorado, even though my dad's from Oklahoma and I'm an Army brat, but we lived in a rural area and you had to take NRA classes like in ninth grade even to get to high school because there were so many deaths when we were younger of people, kids playing with guns. That was a big problem when we were kids.
Yeah, guns weren't a big problem. Drugs were drugs. We used to like Quaaludes back then. Those were like,
yeah,
because you knew when anybody got a new batch of Quaaludes. Because everybody'd have dents in their car because you'd just be on Ludes and you just kind of bump into shit.
Yeah,
you know?
Hash. Remember all the hash you used to get?
Oh yeah,
hash. Fuck, a lot of hash.
Well, that's because all the weed was so bad. You had that bad brown Mexican weed.
Right.
Stems and seeds in it. You know.
I remember that.
I remember when Frampton Comes Alive came out. It was the greatest album ever because you could open it up and you could de-seed weed with the double album. It was like the greatest thing ever.
And it came in handy, those kind of things, knowledge about those kind of things, because I recently went on vacation in Spain, and there's a lot of hash in Spain.
Were you in Spain?
This is like a couple years ago, and all my friends were like, we don't know what to do with this hash. I'm like, bitch, get me a needle in a glass. Anyway.
Yeah, well, they don't, in Europe, there's not a ton of weed. I was in Italy once, and they don't have weed. They just have hash.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they roll it in cigarettes. They roll it with tobacco. Yeah. And I had no idea how strong those were.
Yeah.
They were strong. Strong. It was good.
Anyway, so, and Brian, you're originally from the Valley. What part of the Valley did you grow up, Brian?
I grew up in Granada Hills, and it was a lot like in Spain, where it was just hash. You know,
just hash everywhere. Yeah. Hashtag hash.
The northernmost part of the valley, like before you hit Valencia, it's Granada Hills, like right near Northridge. So I was there my whole life growing up.
Were you there during the earthquake?
No, it was 94, right?
I think so.
Was it 93 or 94?
I was 23 at the time, so I was in Sylmar, actually, sleeping over at my girlfriend's house, and it was just bouncing the place. Like, it was crazy. Sure. Yeah, it was really bad.
Yeah.
And it was like, it felt like a minute or two, but it was probably like 30 seconds.
I've been in like I've been in a bunch of earthquakes, but that was by far...
What city were you in?
I was in the Hollywood Hills.
Oh, yeah.
And it, like, the mirrors came off the walls, the glass was breaking. I mean, it was some scary shit. The worst part was all the aftershocks.
Yeah.
Because it's like you just would kind of calm down a little bit.
And you think, is it going to get big again?
And then all of a sudden an aftershock had happened, and then you just shit yourself again.
Yeah. Right. I remember because I lived in Hollywood, like, off of Melrose. And my ex-husband and I, we had just moved in together, and all his CDs came crashing down, and we couldn't get food. There was, because I had just gotten off the road, so I didn't go to the grocery store like the day before. So we were like, fuck, we're not going to be able
to
eat.
I've only felt one earthquake since being in California, and it just felt like a door slamming.
Yeah, there hasn't been any big ones lately. Right. No. And when there's a big one, you don't remember any of the training you heard in school. Like, you're just like... I just, like, hugged my girlfriend, just waited instead of, like, going under a door.
Yeah, that's what you do, right? You're like,
it's okay.
It scares me. Those are the scariest things. I grew up with tornadoes and all that stuff. They don't.
Tornadoes are the worst, though.
No, tornadoes don't bother me because tornadoes, there's a warning. You know when there's a tornado coming.
Well, there's those secret tornadoes that didn't one come a couple years ago in
Oklahoma, drive right into
Kansas?
Them and not know it's a fucking
bullshit.
Tornado.
No, that's not true.
I will fucking second that so much.
Tornadoes are
a cakewalk.
Because
you're in Oklahoma, in North Carolina, you have all these tornadoes and it's accompanied with rain and hail and all this shit. You can't fucking see it. You can't see it.
Well, what you got to do is have a TV, and on the TV, the news tells
you
that there's a tornado coming.
We didn't have, you probably have like storm shelters and stuff equipped.
We also have tornado sirens that tell you, the siren goes off and tells you the tornado's close.
Every Saturday.
So what do? You go outside and try to dodge it?
There's probably an app for that now. Just get the tornado watch.
Exactly. It's just a little app, you know, and it flashes on. It's like an Amber Alert. It's like, by the way, you're going to get sucked out of this.
It's 3 minutes
away. I was just in Florida when Hurricane Michael came through. I was in Panama City, Florida.
You were?
Yeah, and that was nothing compared to a fucking earthquake because for 3 days you knew a hurricane's coming. 3 days. It's like, get the fuck out of town.
Yeah.
And then we were staying, we were like 20 miles outside of town in this guy's lake house. And
but you stayed?
We didn't stay in Panama City where we knew it was coming in. What we didn't realize, though, is when it comes in, the belt is so wide that it's like where we were, there was like 140, 150 mile an hour winds.
So you were in the middle of it?
Yeah, we were in it, and it was like, it was hardcore. I got some good video. I'll show you some good video.
There's no earthquake app. Like, it just happens.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. It's like all of a sudden you're asleep at 4 in the morning and you're shook out of bed and you're like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
And you don't know if it's going to stop. You don't know how big it's going to be.
Yeah, you don't know if you're like part of the Pacific Ocean now or if like there's going to be a tidal wave or
earthquakes.
All sorts of
earthquakes, the scariest thing.
Well, that's why I will never live by the beach because I worry about the earthquake and then tsunami. That's where I get all clusterfucked.
You're not going to know.
Well, I think we have a great start to our podcast. So what we do is we invite two of our comedy pals to come on the podcast, and they both tell two stories. One is the truth and one is a lie. And I think Brian should start it off. Don't tell us what you're going to tell first, you know, whether it's the truth or a lie. You just tell your story.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. That would be the whole purpose.
Well, I'm sorry to over-explain, but,
I totally get it. You want to make sure there's no mistakes.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so once upon a time in, let's see, I think it was around 1987, I was driving to Magic Mountain. You guys familiar with this place?
Yes. You just said you were 23 and 94.
I didn't tell you my age for this one yet, so there's no... Okay. Oh, you're seeing if I could drive or not. Yeah. Oh, I see.
Yeah, she. See, I because you said you don't need to tell me. I usually then continue on with my little speech. Jessica might interrogate you.
I was born in 71. Okay. I was driving in 87.
Okay.
So, we went to Magic Mountain, and it was back when like annual passes were like $39. It was just like cheapest. We could say that. Bad words and stuff?
Yeah.
I don't know how it works here.
But by the way,
piss, fuck, words like that?
Yeah.
When Court and I went, it was a nickel.
For the whole year.
And everything was made of wood.
The roller coasters were.
But what was scarier than the rides were the earthquakes.
Yeah, exactly. But there wasn't any around then. Anyway, so we went down there, and we're driving home after the long day at Magic Mountain, and we're listening to the Beastie Boys, License to Ill. You guys familiar with this one?
Familiar, yes.
Yeah, it's a great album. It was our favorite album at the time. And you guys know after the song Girls, you know that one is Girls, dun, 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 dun. And then Fight for Your Right comes on with that, bah, bah. So right between those two songs, one of the Beastie Boys goes, yeah! And it's used in a lot of other rap albums now, and like it's been sampled a million times. And I was driving, and I go, there's three Beastie Boys, King Ed Rock, MCA, and Mike D. And we were driving, I go, I love King Ed Rock's voice. I love when he says, yeah. And my buddy Steve goes, that's not King Ed Rock, that's MCA, RIP. And I go, I go, no, that's King Ed Rock. And he goes, you want to bet? I go, fuck yeah, I want to bet. How much? And he's like, whatever you want. I go, how about $50, which was a huge amount of money.
Oh, my God, how do you settle this in 1987?
I'll explain. Well, you can't even... even the internet doesn't tell you who's rapping what part, even now. So, like, this was the thing. So we made this bet, and we were like, okay, how are we going to figure this out now? Like, we can't just ask our stupid friends what their opinion is. So we were like, okay, the stipulation is we have to either ask Mike D, King Ed Rock... MCA, or the producer of the album, Rick Rubin. So there was four people. So at that point, Steve was like, yeah, okay, cool. So we made this stipulation, and we're just thinking, like, this is never going to get solved. So fast forward a couple years, we kind of forgot about the bet. Like, there was no running into Beastie Boys or anything like that. And we were driving again, and that song came on again. And I remember, I looked at his face, we were driving, and I could see in his face, I go, remember our bet? And I could just tell. I could see into his soul that he knew I was right at that point. You know, like it clicked in his head, and I was just like, and he goes, "Well, you're never gonna be able to prove it." That sort of attitude is starting to get like smug with me. So I was like, "Okay, that's it." It lit a fire under my ass, you know. So a couple years later, again, this is probably like early '90s. I was going on a date with this girl. I remember her name was Laurel, and we were
Canyon.
Nope, just Laurel. I think we were going to grab sushi on Laurel Canyon.
And did you?
Here's the thing. I was driving to pick her up, and I was listening to the radio, K-Rock or whatever, and Rick Rubin was the guest. And then they were like, call in if you have a question for Rick Rubin. And I'm like, oh, fuck yeah. I dial the number on my little Motorola flip phone. I kept dialing and dialing. Finally, the guy answers. And there was no Bluetooth or speaker. I'm just driving and holding the thing. And he's like, yeah, what's your thing? I go, I got a question for Rick Rubin. It's going to solve an important bet. I need to talk to him. And he goes, okay, I'll get you on next. I was like, yes. So I'm driving. I'm just driving. I pick up Laurel. I explain to her what's going on.
Did they not screen your question before?
No.
They didn't?
I don't think I remember them screening anything. I said, I have a bet.
Okay.
Yeah. So I pick her up. I explain to her what's going on. I go, I can't hang this phone call up. I got to just stay on. This was like a first date, too, which was made it really awkward. So we get to the sushi place. I'm at the sushi bar, still on hold. And finally, he comes back. He's like, hey, buddy. Yeah, we're out of time. Rick Rubin. I go, there's no way. And he's like, sorry, we can't do anything. Click. And that was it. And that's not the end of the story. That was almost attempt number one. Couple years later, I go to the Beastie Boys concert at the Greek Theater. I'm in the pit against the stage. And I went down there thinking, like, I'm not going here to solve this bet. There's no chance of me actually having a conversation with one of them performing. But while I was in the front row, King Ad Rock, the guy who I like the most, comes over to me, looks behind me at the girl behind me, pulls out his earplug, and he goes, what's she drinking? In the middle, it wasn't his turn to rap, I guess. He had a second to check it out. And I'm like, this is my chance. I can, like, ask. And like, he wants to know. So I ask her. She says, wine. I go, wine. And before I could even, like, he puts it back in and just, like, he just sort of laughed and went back to rapping. So that was almost attempt number two. Okay. This is the last part of the story, and I was on MySpace at the time. Probably 20... When was MySpace big?
Like when was Dane Cook big?
Yeah. Yeah, 1999?
Okay,
yeah.
So this is like 12 years after the bet was made. Okay, like it's just, I almost got it twice. And then I'm on MySpace. And remember, do you remember MySpace? Remember on the left side there was updates?
Right.
So there was an update from the Beastie Boys because I followed them, obviously. And it said, oh, there's a live chat with the Beastie Boys in a virtual world coming up at 4 p.m. And it was in the morning. And I was like, oh, hell yeah. So,
sponsored by Nickelodeon.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, shit.
Could have been.
So it says, download this software first. And I'm like downloading it on a 56K modem at the time, you know. And it took like 3 hours just to get the software. By the time I got it, it was like 4 p.m. after 4 p.m. when it was supposed to start. I finally install it. I'm walking around. I'm like, there's people talking, and like, it's like almost like a primitive World of Warcraft type of thing. Like you're in this virtual world, and it says, ask somebody with a headset if you have any questions. So I run into someone with a headset. I'm like, where's the Beastie Boys? They're like, oh, they're just going from room to room. You just got to get in one and see if they show up. And
what?
I go in a room.
That's like, bullshit.
I go in a room. They're like, yeah, they were here. I'm like, fuck. So I leave. I go out again, and something happened. I fell off like a cliff, and I fell into like another room. And I remember, I'm like, have the Beastie Boys been here? And some guy was like, no. And I'm like, all right. So I just waited a few minutes. I'm like, I just downloaded this thing for 3 hours and nothing's going to happen. And then all of a sudden I saw three things fall into the room out of the sky. And it said, King Ad Rock has entered the room. Mike D has entered the room. MCA has entered the room. And I just pushed the up, you know, cursor, and I went right to the center of the room. And I wrote in all caps, I have a big bet! Exclamation marks. And King Ad Rock writes back to me, what is it? And I write back, who says yeah after girls? And he just writes, me, in all exclamation marks. And I had just learned how to do a screen capture. I hit print screen, emailed it to my friend, and got $50.
Wow.
Nice.
12 years after the bet was made.
Bravo. Wow.
Okay, well, this is one for you. So, you know, the house I was in, Laurel Kane, when the earthquake hit, was King Ad Rock's house.
Oh, Adam Horovitz.
Yeah, so I was really good friends with Donovan Leach, who's been a friend of mine for years. His sister was married. I went to their wedding, to Ad Rock's wedding, and he married Ione. And when they lived down the street, when I moved back from New York, they said, you can stay in our house until we have it, until we start doing all the remodeling on it. So
That's
lived in
cool.
their house for like 3 months. Could have just called me. I could have fucking given you the fucking answer.
Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Wow.
I didn't know that in 1999 they had like virtual rooms that were so elaborate.
It was probably the first one.
The little avatars, you remember those? Like the Yahoo chat rooms that you would be on?
I used to do AOL chat rooms. I feel like I might have pioneered online dating. I was in like AOL chat rooms hitting chicks up all the time, like before there was any apps or websites for dating.
And there was another one. What was it? It was just a block, and it was called ICP or
ICQ.
ICQ. I did that. Sorry, we're reminiscing.
Pervs. I like it. Pervs. We have a lot more in common than I thought. I like this.
I know. And they made fun of us. There you go. All right. Well, that's a really awesome first story. What about you, Court? Bring it.
All right. Well, like I said, I grew up in Oklahoma. And when I was in high school, I used to work at this place called Cappuccino's. It was a restaurant. It was all run by hippies. And I mean, when I say like these guys were all like 60s hippies, they used to do like they had big chili cook-offs, you know, we'd have growing up. They would do the night before acid runs. So they would all test acid the night before they did the big chili cook-off. This was kind of a crazy place. But they did all the catering for the Zoo Amphitheater, which was this outdoor amphitheater in Oklahoma City where all the concerts were. Everybody played there. It was like 5,000 seat, no seats, all grass, and they had like a pit below it. I mean, everybody played there. I saw the Grateful Dead, I don't know, like 10 times. I mean, anybody you can think of, James Taylor, everybody played there. Well, we used to cater the food for the acts. So every now and then, and I was like 16 maybe, 15, 16, and me and my best friend Dave Fusco, his brother was the head chef. We would get to go. And we'd take the food and we set it up on like, you know, little sternos. And we, you know, it was decent food, but we just set up all the food backstage for all the acts. So I got to meet like Cheap Trick. I got to meet these great bands. You know, it was like so much fun. And what we'd usually do is we would like set up the food. We'd hang backstage, and depending on how cool they were, you know, sometimes they were cool, sometimes they were kind of dicks. And we would like kind of hang out backstage, and we would kind of go to the side of the stage, and we'd kind of chill out, and we kind of get to watch the show. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, like I remember going. I think it wasn't the. I want to say it was Sting, maybe. I don't think he was still with the Police, but we got like to sit backstage for one of those. Cheap Trick were the coolest guys ever. Like they
did
let
you
us
ever make friends with anybody and like get their number and you're like lifelong pals now?
No, I was 16 at that point. It's like, what are you going to call? My mom's going to screen the call and she's going to be like, yeah. He smokes too much weed already. Don't call. You're rock and roll. But so one of the coolest ones ever we did was Frank Zappa.
Okay.
So Frank Zappa was backstage, and Frank Zappa was there, and we set up all the food, and we didn't really know a lot about Frank Zappa. I mean, he was kind of weird, and we didn't, you know, we're just kind of there. We're not really fans. We're kind of not paying attention. We're just kind of setting up the food. Me and Dave were like, let's get out here and go smoke some pot and, you know, do this stuff. And so we're setting up the food, and the guy, and Zappa comes in, and it was like, and he was with the mother, you know, they had the big band, everybody there. And he was like, do you guys know my music? And me and Dave were like, yeah. And he goes, you don't know my, you know, like you guys don't know.
What's his most popular song? I don't know anything about
Joe's Garage.
Joe's Garage. He has so many. He has so many. But okay. but the coolest thing was, is he goes, well, you don't know. He goes, you probably like, you know, this or that. You know, we're like, yeah. And so he gets on the piano and he starts like playing like Steely Dan music. And then he gets a band and he just does all this stuff. And he's like, I can play anything, you know, and he does all this stuff. And he became really friendly. And it was like the first guy that really just sat down and talked to two 16-year-olds. And it was Frank Zappa. So we were kind of impressed. We knew, I mean, he was an icon, but we didn't, you know, so. At one point, he goes, are you guys going to watch the show? And we're like, well, we didn't. He goes, why don't you guys sit right over here? And he walked us out, and there's speakers, those great big speakers. Uh-huh. He goes, you guys can sit right on the speakers if you want for the show. And we're like, this is the coolest thing ever, because everybody would think we're cool sitting out. You can see us up on the thing.
Right.
We thought it'd be the coolest thing ever. We didn't give a shit.
Did you have cameras back then that you could document the...
We're 16.
Cameras were invented, but people aren't walking around.
We're 16. We're walking around with this like.
There's one of those ones with the.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Look, like I old mean, outlaws would like, get taken.
Shut up. This is fuck like, y'all. Fuck y'all.
This is like
if you would go to these shows, though, you would think you might want to take a camera because you know you're going to meet somebody famous.
Well, that was also kind of one of the deals, too, is we weren't like, you couldn't be like fans. You had you were like
yeah,
kind of working
16 it. Frank like, even when I was 16 like I didn't really know who Frank Zappa was because he was a little bit before our time but as an adult now you know
so but the coolest thing was is he's so we're sitting on the speakers during the show and he plays this song Dancing Fool and it's a real popular song of his and it's really funny and it starts going and then he's singing Dancing Fool. And he goes, I want to thank my boys, Court and Dave, for coming to the show. They're a couple of dancing fools. And he points to us on the speaker. He goes, get up and dance for us, you fools. And so we're standing on the speakers. Yeah. We're standing on the speakers just high as fuck, by the way, right. At this point. Dancing on stage.
Are you high from the chili cook-off?
No, we're high from smoking weed. We went and smoked weed. After we fed the guys, okay. And then went and sat on the speakers.
That brown Mexican sticks that and stems weed, yeah.
Nasty ass weed, but we were high as fuck. It works,
you had to smoke a lot of it though.
No, you know we were 16. It didn't really matter. So the whole song "Dancing Fool," Frank Zappa had us dancing on the thing, and we sat up there and watched the entire show of Zappa's after the thing, and then after the show he came back and invited us backstage to hang out. We hung out with him for a little bit. And he just could not. It was one of the coolest experiences I've ever had in my life, Frank Zappa. The funny part about that was years later, I was in an acting workshop and in the Berkshires where you go, this lady, Sandra C. Kent, you would live in these houses, you know, and I lived in the house with Moon Zappa and told her the story and she called her dad and he remembered the story.
Oh, wow.
So that was really cool.
Wow.
Well, okay. So there you go.
Wow.
What was Mr. Zappa wearing that evening?
I don't even remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Just jeans or something. I mean, I don't know. It wasn't like.
I'm apt to believe part of that story because I know when I lived in New York, that's when Moon Zappa lived in New York. So I'm apt to believe the Berkshire part of that story.
Sandra C. Kent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That might not be the way he met Mr. Zappa.
Right. Could be, right? Yeah. Interesting. You know what's always so fascinating is sometimes when people come on and they tell like a theme of stories. And for you guys, it's both been big musical acts.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah. Do you have any questions? Andrew, would you like to ask anyone some questions? He's going to have to borrow your microphone.
No, I'm very interested, though. They're great stories.
Yeah. So
I'm curious as to, you know, what the next ones are going to be.
I thought for sure when you started going into, because you said first acid when you were talking about Frank Zappa and then the chili, I thought this was going to be like you're going to acid trip your whole fucking concert. That's where I thought the story was going. Yeah.
Where's the chili acid? Acid chili.
What are you talking about?
The chili guys with the acid.
The guys that owned the restaurant ate acid before the chili cook-offs. They would test acid because when they went to the
chili... So you were just giving us a little background.
Background on how crazy the place was that I worked.
Right.
So it wasn't unusual for us to be smoking pot, you know, hanging out, you know, with rock music.
I never tried acid before, have you?
No, I don't want to do anything.
Really?
That's illegal.
You've never done acid?
No, I never done acid.
Fan-fucking-tastic.
It has its moments and then not-so-good moments.
I've never had a bad...
You've never had a bad acid trip?
No, I've had some really intense ones, but I've never had like a bad acid trip.
Oh, not I. Went, the first time I ever took acid was at a Who concert, and I was married when I was 18, and we went to a Who concert. This is in Boulder at
Red Rocks.
It wasn't at Red Rocks. It was at the college in Boulder, and the Who came in, and I took the acid, and I was tripping my ass off. And then we went back to this cheap motel, and then my first husband, he was 19, because we were very smart people, and then he got up and went to the bathroom, and I thought he was the devil, like fucking hooves and a tail and everything, and I freaked the fuck out.
Did you divorce that guy later?
Later we did divorce.
Yeah, maybe he was the guy.
Maybe he was.
Maybe
he
just saw his true colors.
Well, that's why people are always like, you want to do ayahuasca? And I'm all like, fuck, no, I don't want to do that. Have you ever done that?
I've never done I've been sober a long time. Oh, so okay, but I did buttloads of acid. Acid was more fun to me than mushrooms. Mushrooms were just like, you know, They were like a pussy trip.
Toys.
Toys. Yeah. But acid, because mushrooms, you eat mushrooms, and it's kind of, you giggle a lot. It's kind of fun, and, you know, it's fun. But acid's like got that, you know, like, hang on, the walls are going to breathe.
So how many trips of acid do you think you've done in your lifetime?
I have no idea.
Uncountable.
Uncountable.
I mean, when you're 50. Tripping on acid and something like that happens where you see the devil, okay, it's now do you feeling. Logically know in your mind, like, you know, this is not real, I'm just seeing this, or is everything that's happening around you, you feel like this is real life?
It's right on the edge of both things. It's like together at the same time. And it always ends up with, like, at 5 a.m, me writing letters to my father of how he fucked me over. It's like, it's not a good thing, acid.
No.
Oh, see, I've done shrooms.
I never
times.
Mailed them.
Yeah, no, shrooms. Are, so imagine shrooms, but much more intense.
And kind of speedy.
So, like, you know how shrooms, you kind of get that tingly. You know, you get that kind of tingly.
Yeah, one time it was really, I was laughing, like you were saying, and another time I went to Disneyland, and I thought it'd be all fun and games, and it turned into this freaking
That seems like
weird,
the worst time.
I cried 3 times at Disneyland. Yeah.
See, that's the one thing about tripping. That's the one thing that's like real, you can't go someplace that's not a controlled, you got to be in a controlled environment, or it can get really
weird.
What
points did you cry at? What rides?
No, it wasn't a ride. We only went on 2 rides the whole time. We were there all day, too.
Small world.
It was with a girlfriend, and it was getting, like, we had some intense thoughts and stuff, but also then my older brother's handicapped, and I saw a little handicapped girl talking to Woody, and that made me cry.
I can totally understand that. I can so get behind that. I would have too. I would have been like, oh my God, that's
so cool. It gives
Should've
you
used this
emotions.
For one of my damn stories.
Yeah, that's magical. This is the magic kingdom.
Speaking of stories, what's your second story, Brian?
Oh, okay. So growing up in the 70s, my dad... Okay, do you know about the WWE at all? You know
the
what it is?
World Wrestling...
Entertainment.
Uh-huh.
So, yep.
Okay.
But they used to call it WWF. I'm sure
that's
it was
true.
That in the 70s.
I think in the 90s they got sued by the World Wildlife Fund. Yeah. So anyways, before the 80s, what?
Jessica.
I'm like, what did
I'm
I say
I'm already
wrong?
Questioning. Go ahead.
Everything's
that
been
true
so far.
That part is true.
Anyway. Before the 80s, when Vince McMahon got it from his dad, there was all these... It wasn't one big, huge monopoly of wrestling. There was all these territories. So, like, there was the Southern Territory and the Eastern, and there was just all these different little wrestling areas. And Vince bought them all up, and he made what it is today. He, you know, basically monopolized the whole thing. So my dad, in the 70s, wasn't home a lot because he would always travel to the Northeastern area. There was a... wrestling federation called WWWF, and it was Worldwide Wrestling Federation, and he was like
Worldwide
Wrestling Federation.
Oh, okay,
WWF.
This is 100. I know that this part. I know this part is 100% true.
Okay, but when you say north east corner, what do you mean by that?
It was just like, you know, like if there was like wrestling going on in Philadelphia or like New York or Maine, anything in that upper part, it was like that was their area. That was their territory. So anyway, what happened was my dad told me that they were going to be selling it probably, and it was to Vince McMahon, and I had to, I wasn't going to be able to go to all these things anymore, and all this shit was just, you know, because I was a big fan back then, and he had a couple of the big names before Vince got them all, and he told me before he went into negotiations, it was the last day, he goes, okay, when I go in this time, I'm going to get $50,000 more. We're not going to do it. And they're going to have this big thing. It's going to be the Super Bowl of wrestling every year that he's planning. It's called WrestleMania. And the first one is the next year in 1985. And I'm going to make sure you get front row seats to that. And I was like, okay, yeah, sell that shit, you know? Like, let's just do this. So
I'm sorry. I just want to backtrack on your story so I completely understand. So you're saying your father owned...
No, he was just like one of the like top guys
that worked at that Northeast Wrestling.
Yeah, he didn't own it.
Was he a lawyer?
Okay. No. Why is that a Jewish thing?
No, I just I figured a lawyer
Jewish?
Would be.
Yeah,
a,
I'm Jewish. Okay. Can't, being, you're sitting on the side of me. I mean, can't you?
No, I don't
negotiations
assume anything like that.
No, it wasn't. He wasn't a lawyer. He was part of the Federation.
So he just worked there. He was a hired hand that worked there, or he?
No,
so
he was one of the top guys.
Did your dad just have a high school diploma?
No, he has college.
Did he have a piece of the worldwide?
Why are they making this into some kind of white trash industry?
I don't know.
It's a multi-million dollar industry. You know what?
That's why
you know
what?
Fucking girls. Girls don't understand wrestling. I'm enjoying this.
He was a lawyer. You know.
No. We want to understand the story, and I've actually seen a bear wrestle a human being in a match my dad took me to in Stockton, California.
That's a goddamn truth.
And there's this woman sitting next to me with eating a bologna sandwich, and she'd always yell, "Kill the bear! Kill the bear!" So
if
continue.
That was one of your stories, I would definitely say that was the fake one. But if you say it's true, I believe it.
It's true. We're very invested. We just wanted to understand.
Yeah, no problem. And you asked me if he still has a part of it, and no, he does not.
Did he have a piece of it? Though, and that time
never a part of WWF. Okay, just the WWF.
I'm interested. I'm interested.
We are too. But that's silly.
No, you're not. No, you're not. You're just giving him shit. I'm interested. I want
to
hear this.
No, we're serious.
Trying to poke holes in this.
But that you can't laugh at the WWF and then the WWWF.
So then they changed it to www. No. So the deal was done. He says, yeah, he comes home that night and he's like, I did get the extra 50 and you're going to WrestleMania, which is like, don't know if I told you, this is like the Super Bowl of wrestling. WrestleMania 36 is about to come out in March or April.
Yeah,
so like, it's been out for a long time. This is the first one. And I was like 14 or so.
Oh, wow. That must have been big.
Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah.
So we get on the plane. We go to New York. It was at Madison Square Garden.
Wow. The first WrestleMania was
at Madison Square Garden. Yes. Okay. You can fact check that if you'd like.
Felicia won't let me.
Oh, you know how to do that?
Not during the podcast.
So we get to Madison Square Garden, and we go backstage, and my dad is talking to Vince McMahon, and all these wrestlers are just walking around, like Andre the Giant and Roddy Piper, and I'm just like... And I remember my dad and Vince McMahon were just sitting there talking. I was bored off my ass. And I just go, where's Hulk Hogan? Like, I didn't, because I was 14 and I had no manners. And Vince is like, ha, 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 you like the Hulkster, do you? And I'm like, yeah, where is he? And he goes, okay, so to go down that corridor, there's going to be doors on the right. There's going to be one that says Hogan and T. And I was like, okay. So I run down there as fast as I can. I go down the corridor. There is a sign that says Hogan and T. And I just bust in the door. I didn't knock or anything because I was 14. I had no manners. And I just remember they got startled. They shuffled and like they put something away. I don't know what was going on, but something really jarred them for a second.
Yeah, you run into the door.
Yeah. And he goes, you can't just bust in here like that, brother. Like he was really he was pissed. And
he
was about
taking his vitamins, man.
So funny because that's coming up next. He goes, you can't just bust in doors like that, brother. And I was just like, sorry. And he was really pissed. And Mr. T was in there with him. That's Mr. why it said T, T on okay. the thing with him. And they were both panicking. And I was just like, I don't think it was anything like sexual. I think it was like what you were implying. Like, they were doing drugs or something.
Of course they were.
Yeah. So whatever drugs the 80s wrestlers did, like cocaine. Steroids and cocaine.
Cocaine. Lots of cocaine. Yes.
Yeah. Especially, there's like an hour and a half before the big show.
Oh,
the
100% cocaine. 100% cocaine.
So I was about to cry because I wasn't scared that they were going to beat me up, but like I could tell that they were disappointed. No. I was 14. They were disappointed in me, and I was just like, I fucked this up, you know? Like, I'm sitting here with my two, like, heroes. Like, Rocky III was the biggest thing in the world to me at that point. Like, that was with Mr. T and Hulk Hogan.
And just got scolded.
Yeah, and I just felt like, shit. But then he totally did, like, a 180 once everything was, like, he was just like, it's all cool, you know? He's saying your prayers and doing your vitamins and all that shit. And Mr. T gave me a high five, and they gave me, like, they had some black and white photos of themselves, and they gave it to me. And he goes, have a fun at the show. It's going to be great. Da, 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 da. And I was just so happy. And so I went back to my dad, and he sat us literally front freaking row. Like, it wasn't second or third. It was right. If I jumped over the thing, I'd be in the freaking ring practically.
Was this one televised?
Yeah, this is the first It was televised. Like, I don't know. I think you had to watch it on pay-per-view back then. Like, it was probably like $69 or $49,
so
whatever
the
hell
you,
it was.
See, if we were to watch it now, we would see you.
That's
on
the
TV.
Finale of this. I'm about to tell you. This is the best part. So, yeah, you can see me, but you can really see me when, okay, you know how Hogan would just, like, he'd come out, he'd pull off his shirt and rip it off and shit,
right,
like that?
Right, yes.
So instead of just throwing it to the crowd, he actually came over to right where me and my dad were, and you can see this if you get the VHS tape or if you subscribe to the WWE Network. He hands me his ripped shirt, and I still have it at home. And I have that shirt.
We've had one person bring evidence. Did you bring yours?
No, because then you would know whether it was real or not.
We don't know. No, we don't. I mean,
oh, I could have just brought, like, yeah, well.
Oh, Mary.
I didn't know your rules. But wow. And I actually ran into Hulk Hogan like 5 years ago, and I reminded him about it. We were at like a mall, and he's like, "That was you," and I was like, "Yeah, that was me. Like, I met you before," and like it was like just cool, just like yeah so.
Wow,
you don't remember me doing cocaine, do you, boy?
I pity the fool who watches us do coke.
Yeah, you ran into Hulk Hogan, though. Where did you run into him?
At a mall, Northridge.
In Northridge Mall?
Yeah.
That's a big mall.
Yeah.
Northridge Mall.
I know that he lives in Miami.
Yeah, no, he does now. He lived in Northridge for many years.
Did Mr. T have all his jewelry on?
He was from Venice. No, he did not. Because he was about to go out and do a boxing match with Roddy Piper.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like Mr. T was fighting Roddy Piper in a boxing match, and there was fake boxing in WrestleMania 1. That is true. You guys are like you guys are. The funniest part is the skeptical parts are like.
No, I'm sure that you have all the wrestling stuff memorized, because I'm sure you actually were a huge fan. So
I
that
am
part,
still. I watch WWE Raw every Monday.
I'm not going to doubt that at all.
Yeah.
I know. I think that's true.
Then what are you going to doubt?
Doubt. Well, we don't know if Hulk really gave him
the shirt.
The shirt. And his dad, he won't go into detail what his dad did. He just worked for him. He does.
No, he was like one of the four head owners of the WWE. Oh,
so he did have a piece in it.
So he did have a piece
in
it.
You asked me if he still had a piece in WWE. No, that's what I was answering.
Oh, no, I was asking if he had
there is no more WWE to have a piece in.
WWF.
So he eventually sold his...
That was what this deal was.
Yeah, yeah.
The whole deal was he was giving his territory to Vince McMahon.
Okay, we
for
just
all this
to be
I'm just
clear.
Explaining. Yeah, we had a miscommunication.
I just want to be clear. You don't have to get upset.
You're like, does he still have a stake in the thing he sold?
Hey, I would have been pissed off if I was telling this story
Thank
at this
you.
Point. Yeah. God damn it. Fucking with heroes like Hulk Hogan and Mr. T.
What?
Doing We're blow in a dressing room. Fucking stellar heroes.
Yeah, when you asked me that, I assume you meant
Did they have any powder around their nostrils?
I wouldn't even know to look for powder when I was that age. Like, I had no
really?
Idea.
Really? Living in the valley as a kid in the 80s?
I didn't smoke weed till I was 31.
Right.
That's the truth.
Really?
Yeah, I never smoked weed once till I was 31. I never have done coke.
Are
Never
you Googling,
acid.
Jessica?
No. I do the avails, so I have to get them in before a certain
okay.
time. So
I know, but we are doing a podcast.
I know.
Anyway, so, Court, what is your second
All right, so
story?
I'm going to stick with the rock and roll theme, because I think it's, I just thought of. So, this was probably about 15 years ago, because I had a couple years sober. I was sober, and I wasn't working at the time, and a friend of mine is this guitar player who wrote, you know, the that movie Lost Boys?
Uh-huh. That's my favorite fucking movie!
Wow.
Finally, something got her off those fucking avails. Jesus.
Somebody's not getting a spot this week.
I've never seen Lost Boys.
Are you serious?
Swear to God.
Wow, really?
So they have this, there's this great, like, haunting song in Lost Boys.
Okay.
So my buddy Gerard wrote this song for Lost Boys, and he's a great guy.
Which
he's English.
One?
The whatever, what do you know, the one they play?
Thou
when,
shall.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah. That look you just did. Oh my God. You should have seen it.
So happy for you. So Gerard wrote that song, and he was like this English songwriter who kind of did a lot of studio stuff and everything. And so there was this party. They were doing this Christmas party. Paradigm Agency is a big music agency, and they were doing their Christmas party at the Brown Derby in Los Feliz. And so the head of the agency was this guy. I cannot remember this guy's name for the life of me. But they were doing this fake behind the music. So it was like, you know, when behind the music was a big deal. So they're doing a fake behind the music. And what it was is all these people that worked in the agency were all kind of fake players and behind the music of the story of this band that became huge and then split apart. And they were coming back together for this one big show. And so all these, but what it was is it was just people who worked at the agency that played instruments. So they created this band, this fake band. And the head of the agency was in the band. And then the other guy that was in the band was Roger Daltrey. And this guy had known Roger Daltrey his whole life. So your favorite Who story. And and so what they were doing is they had this week of rehearsals where they were rehearse all these different songs. Uh-huh. And then at the Brown Derby, they were going to play them. And then Roger Daltrey would come out as a surprise and they would, you know.
The Brown Derby?
That was a restaurant.
It was a restaurant on Los Feliz.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they did all Who songs, but mm-hmm. they were all Who songs. And so.
Eminence Front? Did they do that?
Huh? They didn't do Eminence Front. And so, and there was a big argument about doing Bob O'Reilly. But so anyway, so they asked, so Gerard goes, I need someone to be Roger's assistant for a week while we do all these rehearsals, and then you'll be his assistant at the Brown Derby. And I was like, oh, that sounds cool. You know, yeah, I got nothing to do. I'll do it. So basically all week I would just go to rehearsal with Roger and just bring him tea. That's all I didn't do anything besides bring the guy fucking tea. And then they would do these rehearsals and they rehearsed all week and it was boring, but it was what it was. And then the night of the show comes and I go to the Brown Derby. I meet him. He gets out of his limo and we go around the back and we go into this little room and we're sitting in this little side room and it's me, Gerard, and Roger Daltrey. And so we're sitting in the side room and, you know, I mean, we were friendly, but we hadn't been, you know, we hadn't really talked much because he was doing rehearsals and stuff. And there were all these guitars in the room that they were using for the show. And the party's going on in the other room, and we're just kind of sitting in the side room because we're the surprise. And while this is going on, there's like a 12-string Martin guitar. And I'm okay on guitar. I'm not great, but I can play. And I go, is it okay if I play this guitar? And George's like, yeah, sure, you can play the guitar. So I start playing the guitar, and I'm playing Ring of Fire, Johnny Cash. And Roger Daltrey starts singing Ring of Fire. So then he's like, oh, fuck, this is fun. Let's warm up. And so then Gerard picks up the guitar.
Wait a minute. Is Ring of Fire, if you're like a novice or someone that's newer to.
It's easy. It's like three chords.
That's what I was saying.
It's like three chords.
Because all the white guys sing it at karaoke. Yeah. And, okay.
So we start singing Ring of Fire. So now I'm singing Ring of Fire with Roger Daltrey. And then Gerard. And so then he starts singing. So we sat there for 45 minutes and I jammed with Roger Daltrey. And got to sing with Roger Daltrey.
Well, you're using the right lingo, jammed.
Shut up, Jessica. This gentleman just told a fucking pristine story, and you can't give him a fucking breather of respect?
Yeah, it's Roger fucking Daltrey.
Wow, that's a good one, Court. That's a good one.
There you go.
Wow, you guys.
And he's from The Who. Wow. But did you maybe just think of that because she brought up The Who?
No, I went to The Who's first final tour, their first final tour, in 1982 at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas.
The Cotton Bowl?
The Cotton Bowl in
Dallas. I think that might have been the tour that I saw.
Their first final tour.
Yeah, The Who's final tour. I think that was the same tour that I saw.
And did a shit ton of acid at that one.
Yeah, there you go.
And that was a great show. Yeah. But that was, I think, the first time they toured after the people died. At the Cincinnati show.
It's true.
And then we were paranoid leaving the show because there were so many people. It was a weird thing. But,
yeah.
But
they had
fun.
First aid tents that they had set up in wherever I saw them, in Boulder, the University of Boulder, whatever. But, you know, did you remember the stage on that tour? Because they had it was The Who, it was a WHO, and it was so big that the stage was in the bottom of the Those are great stories.
That's a really good story, but one of them is a lie.
But my question,
any of them to be false. They seem
I know
great.
They're all great stories. My question was the Brown Derby, because didn't the Brown Derby, what year did that close, right?
I don't know what year, but I know old school
restaurant, right?
Yeah, but it was the Brown Derby, so they had it set up. There was like a little side room at the front closest to Los Feliz Boulevard, and then the Brown Derby.
What year was this, you think?
This had to be, so I guess, like 2003, 2002?
2003, huh? Do we have, you think it wasn't open?
I think the Brown Derby closed in the 80s, I want to say. Okay. That's... See, and then I made you have that fucking rule about no Googling, but I feel like the Brown Derby closed in the 80s, so that, do you have any questions you want to ask?
Well, where was it located, the Brown Derby?
It's on Vermont in Los Feliz Boulevard.
But then for some reason I thought the Brown Derby was more south than that. I don't know. Any questions for Brian?
Oh.
Oh. Maybe you should send in some more veils and think about it.
Well, I just think that I was just thinking, if the wrestling one is a lie, the ridiculousness of the WWWF or whatever the fuck that was, then that's hilarious, is all I'm saying.
But you're saying that they called it the WWWE back then?
No. This is it. There was the WWF, which was... what Vince McMahon started.
Right. He had to change that, it.
Right. My dad's territory was the WWF, and he bought that, and WWF went away.
I thought you said it was the WWE.
No. It's F. Federation. Entertainment is what came along. The only time E came into play is after the Wildlife Fund, World Wildlife Fund, right, sued them. Yeah, everything before that was federations and associations.
And what made why was your dad in this business?
I don't know why he was in.
Yeah,
the
how did he get into
his
that?
Son, you would know this.
Yeah, how did he get into wrestling?
How did he get it? When I was born, he was in it. That's not something you just like. How did this start, Dad?
Yeah, but you're such a wrestling.
You never
fan.
Said how did you fucking get into wrestling?
It was more of a business thing. I don't think he was even that big of a fan. I was a fan. Like he was just like part of the.
So
corporation.
What does your dad do now?
He's retired, but he was an IRS agent after that happened for many years.
So after wrestling, he went to the IRS.
Yes.
I'm going to say...
Can't get away from acronyms.
I'm going to say the Beastie Boy story is true and that fucking wrestling story is complete bullshit. What do you think, Jessica?
I'm going to say that the wrestling is true.
Wow.
Why, you say? Uh-huh. I'll tell you why.
Yes, please do.
Because I think he was trying to throw us off with the, I don't know why my dad was in it. Whatever.
It wasn't like that.
You know, here's the thing. But he was so specific on his first story. The tears of this first story. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but it was almost set up too much, like a story, like rules of three.
Right.
You know.
What about you, Andrew? What are your thoughts?
I don't know. I want the wrestling one to be true. I will.
More than a Beastie Boys?
Yeah, because I'm a computer dork, and as much as I want to believe that the virtual
stuff that was
kind
too
of,
that was
I mean like
too advanced the time too.
Sort of, yes and no, but it could have been just very very basic at the time, which is the way you said it. But I still think that maybe that's not true. That's my only kind of wavering thought on the Beastie Boys story.
Do you want to take a guess, Court?
I'm going to say that the WWWF. See, I got it fucking right. I'm going to say that that one is true. And I'm going to say the Beastie Boys story has got some truth in it, but that it's
right.
False.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
I can tell you this. One of the stories is absolutely 100% true, and the other one is 100% made up, and I didn't get it from somebody else or just steal someone's story. Like, it is completely made up.
I'm going to go the Beastie Boys story's made up.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to say. Well, especially because you got the rules of three with comedy, and you did three beats. That's the one that's fake, then.
All right, I'm against all these guys, and I'm going to say the Beastie Boys story is true. What is it?
You're right.
No! Yes! Yes! Yes, cranky motherfucker.
That's bullshit.
Yes.
Yeah, what does your dad do?
Back then, he was just an IRS.
Yeah.
Agent.
Yes.
I hate Brian Monarch.
I never get it.
She's
right, by
better.
The way.
I was
She's
so
better.
I was so fuck, man.
God damn it.
You so wanted to be true.
Yes. I wanted to fucking hold the Hulk jersey.
He really put up for you during that
whole
story.
I know.
Yeah.
really let him down.
I did look up online to see what the Northeastern Territory was. So it is WWF, and he knew that, so that was good for me.
You defended his bullshit story.
God damn it.
Wow.
At first, I was going to call it NEW, Northeastern Wrestling. I was going to say they had like an acronym of NEW, and then I was like, no, I'm going to look up the real one. Like, I wrote it out.
I would have known that because I was into the Southern Wrestling, where they had Jimmy Snuka and Andre and all those guys when I was growing up.
Jerry Lawler.
Oh, we should have known Andre being Madison Square Garden, of course.
And if WrestleMania was at Madison Square Garden.
And you're definitely not there in the video at all.
No, I'm not in the video at all. I didn't attend. Never even saw it until years later.
But just out of does your dad still work for the IRS?
No, he does people's taxes now.
Then you're fucking useless, man.
Can't help you there.
God damn it.
Can't get your wrestling tickets or a good tax.
Those are good stories, though. Those they were very thorough. Thanks. I like that. I like that. All right, so, and then court stories are about Zappa, Frank Zappa, and dancing like a foolish person on top of the speakers. Mm-hmm. And then the second story is about jamming with Roger Daltrey at the Brown Derby. The Brown Derby fact, I don't know. That's where I'm going to say that the Frank Zappa one is true, because I feel like the Brown Derby thing is not correct.
All right, see, this is where I'm going to depend on you and your knowledge.
Don't depend on me. Yeah. Don't depend on me and my
it's like
old
still
lady
there.
If I drive by there and it is there, I'm going to be pissed.
No, it definitely closed, but I feel like it closed before then. Because I remember thinking when it closed, I heard it on the news. I was like, oh, I wish I would have been able to go inside there. And I feel like that
was... Oh, you never went in?
I never went in. No, but it was like an old school, like old Hollywood restaurant, right? The Brown Derby, yep. Right? Yeah.
So what did they serve food-wise?
Just like regular old food. Just, I mean, like an American... like, you know, steaks, burgers.
I mean, it's not
like nothing. It's like, what does Musso and Frank serve?
What is Musso and Frank?
Exactly.
Steaks,
just
chops,
food. Yeah,
chops.
It's just food. Oh, yeah. Just like American
fancy.
Food.
Fancy.
Yeah. What about, you got any questions, Andrew?
No. I don't have any questions. I do think, I'm just going to be, I'll be the first to guess, though.
Okay.
I want to say that the Zappa is true, but it didn't happen to you. I think the Derby is that one with Robert Daltrey. I want to say that one's true. The other one's false. But it happened to someone else.
What are your thoughts, Brian?
You know, they're both real. I don't know. They're both realistic sounding.
And they're so close related. As
yeah,
far as being
they were both like
musical.
They both felt similar. But I can't picture him dancing on a speaker. But I mean, that was a long time ago. Maybe he did. But I also am worried about this Brown Derby thing.
Well, now I, you know, don't use my facts.
I was in Teen Wolf.
The movie or the TV show?
The movie.
Oh, cool.
You were in Teen Wolf?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I'm just going to guess that the second one was not, because you said you played with him for 45 minutes and you didn't play that well. Like, I feel like he would have been like, I'll give you 5 minutes. Not 45.
So you think the first story is true?
Yeah, let's go with the first story being true.
Jessica?
So you think he was dancing?
He was dancing now.
Okay.
Jeez, you know, you're a really good liar, obviously, because either one that's not true is tough to tell. I would say I love the Lost Boys so much. That I would really like that to be true. Why would you do me like that? So I'm going to say that the Zappa thing, you jammed. You're a jammer.
So Zappa, you say he's danced on top of the speakers.
No.
Zappa's
I'm sorry.
False.
The Who
thing, Roger Daltrey.
Yeah,
I like that it's going
over.
Split, so that's
okay.
Good. That's good.
Right.
I think he jammed with The Who.
Okay, and Court. What is it?
I
said that I believe the Frank Zappa story and not the Brown Derby story.
I never went to the Frank Zappa concert.
Oh, no!
No dancing on the speaker.
No dancing on the speaker.
I should have went with my instinct.
Woo!
But I did jam with Roger Daltrey.
At the Brown Derby?
At the Brown Derby. The Brown Derby used to be on the corner of Sunset and Vine.
Okay.
And they closed the Brown Derby on the corner of Sunset and Vine.
So you lied about that?
No. And then they opened the Brown Derby on in Los Feliz. And it was in Los Feliz for a long time. And I don't think
And I want to say that I don't even know that it's not the Brown Derby now.
Wow. That's why you thought it was somewhere else. You did say that.
It used to be on the corner of Sunset and Vine because you used to have a huge brown derby
yeah,
on top of it.
A hat, yeah.
And then they moved it to
where
that place is. And I think, you know, it might have closed, but in 2003, it was the Brown Derby. 2002, wow. 2003. Wow. And
that's why you should never.
But I did cater the Zoo Amphitheater, and I did, and there were some great bands, but I didn't go to Frank's.
What kind of name is the Brown Derby?
Well, because a derby is a hat. It's a round hat that gentlemen used to wear, like in the 20s and 30s.
I was
or whatever.
Thinking of like a horse race.
Yes, but yeah. No.
How many people got his right and wrong?
I got
two. We got 50-50.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Sorry, I misled you with the Brown
but
Derby.
You really, okay. You fooled us.
Yeah,
the
you
most.
Were good. Yeah,
yeah, I got 3-1. You're the only one that.
You're a much
up.
Better liar than I am.
Thank you.
Wow, this has been a wonderful episode. Where can people catch you, and how can they follow you?
Oh, at brianmonarch.com or on Instagram at brianmonarch. Anything Brian Monarch, you'll find me.
Okay, and how about you, Court?
Same thing, Court McCowan. CORTMCCOWN.
Thank you guys so much for taking time out today to come down here at the Comedy Store on 4 o'clock on a Monday afternoon to tape this with us. We certainly appreciate that.
Word up.
I'm Felicia Michaels. You can follow me at Felicia Michaels on Twitter. Andrew?
You can follow me everywhere at One Andrew Rose. Everywhere.
One Jessica? Andrew Rose? Could get the Andrew.
No.
I'm Jessica Wellington. Follow me at Jess Wellington 2 on everything. And you've been lied to.